Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woohooer, a hand clapper, a high fiver? I kind of like the high five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At chumbacasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses. So don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions 18 plus.
We've all been there. It's Wednesday night and the Champions League is in full swing. A player you've never heard of picks up the ball on the halfway line. He goes past one, goes past another, and then all of a sudden he's on the edge of the box. He doesn't look up, but he curls a beauty into the top right-hand corner. He's the next big thing coming to Spurs. You sure of it? Well, now you can make a bit of cash on your prediction too. Football Index is the stock market for buying shares in footballers and the only football stock market available. They can even win payouts when they score an assist and when they perform in the media. Remember, this is an investment and a sure way of making profit, similar to what Harry Winks and Oliver Skipp were when they were promoted to the Tottenham Hotspur first team. So go to www.footballindex.co.uk or download this app. Use the code SPURS on sign up to get the £500 money back guarantee. Start trading in something you love today with Football Index. Terms and conditions apply. 18 plus, and please gamble responsibly at begambleaware.org. Thank you for your support as always. The last word on Spurs has teamed up with Harry's. Now, Harry's is a shaving product which, to talk you through the story, two ordinary guys, Jeff and Andy, were fed up with overpriced razors and started Harry's to fix shaving. Now, Harry's knew there was only one way to ensure quality, so they bought their own factory. By taking less profit, Harry's offers great quality products for a fair price. Their amazing quality blades are almost half the price of the leading five blade brand. Now, Harry's trial set includes everything you need for a close, comfortable shave. Weighted ergonomic handle, five precision engineered blades with a lubricating strip and trimmer blade, along with rich lathering shave gel and a travel blade cover as well. Now, I've used Harry's personally, and I'm a man that likes to keep my beard in shape, and I can tell you, you won't go wrong using Harry's. You can get started shaving right now with Harry's today by claiming your trial set for only £3.95. Support our podcast and get your trial set delivered to you, including a razor handle, five blade cartridge, foaming shave gel and travel blade cover by simply going to harrys.com/spurs.
Tis the season to be hunched over your laptop. Not on our watch. In real life, you can feel your senses and your baskets. Feel all the sights, sounds, lols and OMGs. Wear laughing emojis on actual smiley faces. Batteries running low. Take the kids to Santa's grotto. In real life, you can find just the right present using the most advanced search engine in the world. Your eyes. We heart in real life. Brent Cross, London. Free parking for all sleighs and cars.
Hello and welcome to the last word on Spurs. A break, an international one. And for some Spurs fans out there, I think it's probably what we need. But don't worry, we're still talking all things Tottenham. And we've gone and brought back the man, the legend of this football club. Arguably our greatest ever player, to some, one of them. What a legend he is. The skipper himself. I'm delighted to say we've got Steve Perryman, 866 appearances for the football club, 39 goals, two UEFA Cups, two FA Cups, two League Cups. Steve, thank you so much, or Skip, I should I say, for joining us for this special show. How are you?
I'm fine. Thank you very much. Thanks for inviting me on. I'm absolutely delighted to be talking to you, and hope I can keep your people entertained.
Oh, Steve, you kept us entertained for God knows how many years on the pitch and off it. You are a true gent. And Jace, we're just so pleased and humbled to have this man joining us, aren't we, for this hour in store?
For me, there's not a bigger legend. I know Danny Blanchflower won the double and things like that, but 800 and over 800 appearances and you know, in a 15-year career, never being dropped and playing 40-plus games a season, every season. The fitness of the man and the consistency of the man, it is quite a remarkable career he had. Absolutely wonderful.
Now, Jason, you've already had a very good read of this book. Tell us what you think of it.
It is an amazing quality of a book. It's a bit like the, you know, your real glossy paper, like the Spurs shirt was on last year. It's not your traditional big black print on see-through paper that most autobiographies are. The quality is fantastic. But the story just takes that quality even further. It's an amazing read. It's a fantastic read. It'll be perfect for Christmas. But the story within it is one that every single Spurs fan should know about. That's for sure.
Yeah. The book itself, Steve, how long had you been planning it for?
I answered a question the other day to someone and same thing. How long have you been planning this? So I said, well, I've been being asked for the last 5 years. And the publisher friend of mine said, Steve, it's 10 years we've been asking you. And I think the length of time that I've been thinking book says something about the quality, because the quickest you can turn a book round, if you're not that bothered by the what you're presenting out there in your name, is about 6 weeks. And some have done it in 6 weeks. I've been talking to Adam Powley, the chap who co-wrote the book with me, for about 18 months. And we talk about, you know, he goes through a set sort of pattern of journalism. So, but in between, I'm working at Exeter or I'm helping at MK Dons. And things happen, and I think, you know, that happened in my career, and this is how we dealt with it. So all these different aspects were coming up to remind me to mention it to Adam, to add a bit of depth to the book. And I'm not a great reader, I have to be honest, but I might be reading a Sunday magazine or hearing a news story, and that would sort of prompt me to think along a certain line. So as much as it was in depth, it's then during 18 months got sort of layers added to it. Now I'm talking like I'm a massive book man, but I'm not. But in terms of the information that I was giving over to Adam, it just means that I didn't really forget too much. And of course, when you get to our age, there's a lot of things passed you by and a lot of things that need to be said, and you can't get it all in a book. But I think this is as good a try as anyone could have given. And so I'm really proud of it. Who wouldn't say that? You kindly mentioned the quality of the paper and stuff like that and the photographs. Well, I've been lucky enough to have a Ted, my oldest brother, and he's sort of been a bit of a mentor to me, and especially in my young days. And then I happened to meet other people, and I regard a mentor as someone who doesn't get paid to advise you. You know, a coach working at a football club, of course, that's his job to pass you on information, to try and help your game, try and eradicate problems within your game and stuff. But of course they get paid for that, and rightly so. Of course they need to. I've met various people in my career at different stages that have just helped me and had an effect on me, and I felt they deserved to be highlighted, because like I said, they did it because of probably me, of course, my brother is going to help his younger brother. Phil Holder, who was a teammate of mine and a colleague in the apprentice days and into the early professionalism, he had a real profound effect on how I played the game because of his character. And I liked the things he did and how he carried himself on the football field. So I sort of went along with that. And another chap called Alf Darcy, who some people rate as the best amateur English international. And he led us on tours with Tottenham. And therefore, I spent a lot of time with Alf in hotels and planes and wherever. And, you know, this was probably one of the most professional people I've ever met. And he was never a pro footballer, but he thought in a professional way. And someone else along the same lines as that, people may know, is a man called John Newman. Now, there was a John Newman in professional football, but I never knew him. And he had the link with Exeter City. But my John Newman is from Billericay, that sort of way, Essex. And he got, I think he won the Vars twice with Billericay and got them to a third final. And was sort of made Billericay famous before all this sort of other nonsense has gone on in the last few years. So I thought these people deserved to have some credit. And for me to give people the idea how a professional player can be influenced along his career. And maybe I was just lucky that I met the right people, but they certainly added things to my game and made me act and think a bit different. And when you back that up, of course, with Keith Perkinshaw, Eddie Bailey, Bill Nicholson, et cetera, and the fantastic teammates that I had, you know, people like Mike England telling you as a 17-year-old, Steve, slow down, you're not going to last. You've got to, you know, take a breath. And, you know, Pat Jennings is always a good one, never loud, but great with his voice and helping you. So, you put all that together. I've had great help in my career. And I just think those people needed to be explained how they helped me. And any young player coming through these days, a bit of advice I would give them is, you know, someone said to me about a couple of years ago, and these are the type of things that I write down and note for when I'm doing a book. A clever person lives from his own experiences, improves from his own experiences. And I'm sure I've done that over the course of 800 odd games. A very clever person doesn't only learn from his own experiences, he learns from others. And, you know, I think there's a bit of a clue there as per my progress or my longevity or my ability to be selectable. And all goes to helping your career. And I suppose in a selfish way, what you're looking to do is miss the cut every year. You know, when I first started, there was 50 professionals at Tottenham and probably 16 apprentices. Well, you want to get through those apprentice years and become a pro. And then when you're a pro, you've got to hang on to being a pro. You want to miss the cut at the end of the year when they let 8 go and sign 4 new ones, etc. And then, of course, you get into the team. So you're good enough to miss the cut. And now you want to miss the cut of the team selection. So actually, although I'm a team player, I'm a team person, you are putting yourself above the others that are vying for your position on the apprentice list or the professional list or the first team list. It takes a bit of thought. It takes a bit of cleverness, I suppose. And one of the other things with regard to seeking improvement, I never really fancied myself as a footballer. Now, I know that's difficult to sort of understand because, you know, for instance, the respect level I got yesterday signing books at Tottenham was immense. And, you know, people said some very nice, kind things, as you two have done already. If you come away from a game thinking, how good am I? Wow, I'm half a good player. You probably start to then sort of rest on your laurels and don't think about improving. But it was always to the front of my mind, if I made two bad passes a game, if I give a dodgy back pass, if, you know, someone beat me too easy. And therefore, I always looked at my own game first. And I think that helps you just keep the edge that you need to want to improve and seek the improvement, be it practice by listening to people, the right people. And I mean, I thought I run funny style. I hated seeing myself on television. I weren't a classy mover by any means. My brother, who was a mentor, Ted, older brother, he sometimes said to me, "You look like you're running uphill." And that wasn't the fact he thought I was slow. That was the fact that I didn't sort of straighten my knees out. So I would rather be critical than praise myself. And I think that's called being humble. And that's not me just saying it. I, you know, even within the book that I'm so pleased of, I think I maybe could have said that a bit better or change that a bit better or what. So it's it comes back to your character. I'm not saying my character's better than anyone else's, but I'm we're all our own character, aren't we? I think my character helped me be consistent as a person, consistent as a player, and which led to me having a long career.
Obviously, the early chapters refer to your growing up and your fantastic schoolboy career. But when you finally signed in the summer of 67, within a few weeks, Bill Nicholson, the great man himself, was already thrusting you into the limelight when we were due to play European champion Celtic. And how tough was it as an apprentice and, of course, working under the players, the characters like Bill, but Eddie Bailey and particularly Johnny Wallace at that time?
Yeah, well, you know, you've named three great people there in my eyes. When you leave school at 15, you virtually fell out of bed to go to school. You know, you start about 10 to 9, you get home about 20 to 4. There's no hardship in that, is there? Walking to school, a bike to school, or even a bus. But then all of a sudden you are thrust into this world. And it's my own doing. I was good enough to sign for a professional club. Tottenham were the first to recognise that, which sort of stayed in my memory. The fact that I didn't sign that schoolboy form that was offered me the first time Charlie Faulkner came around the house, with the influence of my brother, you know, my big brother Ted said, he's only 4 years older than me, so I was an under 15, so he's sort of 19-ish. He don't have to sign that form. If you want him to come training, he can come training, but he don't have to sign that form. So I'm thinking, Ted, shut up. You know, there's no other club wants me. Just let it go. Anyway, he wouldn't let it go, and therefore I could go training at Tottenham, as I really enjoyed during that most of that year. And, you know, eventually you're seen good enough to sign an apprentice, and they decided on me, and I decided on them, as against others.
Including that lot down the road.
Of course, of course. I never felt comfortable there. I did go for a trial. I did go for a training night. I didn't feel warm. I didn't feel anything there, and was the total opposite to how I felt at Tottenham. Now, you know, perhaps Tottenham were putting on an act for me, but I don't think they were. I notice how they treat other people, you know, boys that had signed the schoolboy form, for instance. So they were there. They had to sign if they were offered it. So Yeah, I mean, my big decision was between QPR, which was a local team for me that I used to watch. I can't say I supported them, but I used to watch, dragged along by two older brothers. And the other two were West Ham. And remember, this is 1967.
Yeah.
Hurst, Moore and Peters, World Cup glory, etc. So my brother, my influence, said, Steve, West Ham, that's the team that will teach you how to play. And a love, well, the beginning of a bit of love, or certainly respect for Tottenham Hotspur for being first on my doorstep and treating me so nicely. So I opted for Tottenham, fantastic decision. But then you got to cope with this new life. And I went from travelling about 10 minutes to school and 10 minutes home to travelling 2 hours to Tottenham and 2 hours home. My apprentice day started at 7 o'clock, so I was probably up at six, leave my house at seven, almost 2 hours to the dot to arrive at the gates at Tottenham, and 2 hours home at the end of the day. So it actually lasted from seven in the morning till seven at night, and that is extremely tiring, all that goes with it. You've also got the mental pressure of a group of people that you're training with or you're changing alongside that believe you've had a backhander to join the club because I was wanted by so many people, which wasn't true. And of course, over the time, I'm invited to do things. I travelled with a team in my first year apprenticeship to push the skips because Cecil Poynton was ill. He still went, but he wasn't feeling great. So I mean, they chose me in front of others. Well, of course there's a bit of jealousy starts, and you know, the discipline in any sort of club at that time was almost like a sort of military discipline, where you had, you know, you had to be tested. And you know, as a 15-year-old changing in the same changing room as 20 21 year olds is a bit to take, because I tell you what, their banter, as it's called today, was top quality. And you only had to step out of line or say the wrong thing, they were on you. So what you're talking about is, after a few days, the call comes from down the far end, which is where the first team were, to this end, where the youngest of young were. Bill Nicholson wants to speak to Steve Perryman. So they're looking at me saying, what's he want to speak to you for? I don't know. Well, you better get down there and see what he wants. And then you come back and report to us what he wanted. So I go down there, and Bill says, how you doing? Yeah, fine. He said, big game coming up. Celtic are playing our team. We're the FA Cup holders. They're the European Cup holders. It's going to be over 100,000 people at this pre-season game, and the cameras are going to come and speak to our players about it. So while the cameras are here, on behalf of a different type of program, a kids' magazine program, they want to talk to someone about the life of an apprentice professional. And I've said, you're going to do it. Now, straight away, I'm thinking, how can I go back to that dressing room where I change and tell that mob? So I said, no, Bill, I can't. Look, I've said you're doing it. So I go back down the other end. What did he want? So now I got to tell a lie. So I said, my dad's forgot to sign a form or something. I got to get it off my dad. Oh, anyway, that was okay with them. So I couldn't sleep for 2 days, two nights. Creeped back down to see Bill Nicholson, because if I'd been spotted, they'd have said, what are you doing down that end? You don't belong down there. Knock on his door, come in. He said, what do you want? I said, Bill, I've been thinking about that. I can't do that TV thing. I've never spoken on telly before. I can't do it. I've said that you're going to do it. I said, but Bill, you said it's about the life of an apprentice professional. I've only been an apprentice for 3 days. I don't know the life. He said, trust me, you are going to do it. So what Bill wanted to do, they'd signed a much fated schoolboy international player, and he wanted to sort of advertise the fact that Tottenham could sign this level of player from the young ranks, the schoolboy ranks. Of course, it didn't do me any good. You know, these people that think because I played for England schoolboys, I'm flash, which I certainly am not, or I had a bung, which I certainly did not have, that they now I'm being specially treated. And I actually don't know how I got through that. I don't know how I got through it. The mental torment of that travel, that spotlight being on you, that glow, if you like, and then of course, all things being equal, you being pre-season, you're going to feel stiff, you're going to feel sore, you're training like you've never trained before. Not that you're unfit as a schoolboy, but you certainly are not fit enough. So with all this thing going on in your head, you know, I struggled with it. And then you pick up an injury because your body is being overworked. The injury finds your weakest part of your body, which was my back. And I was out with a back problem for about a month or even longer than that. And now you're traveling on the train and you're absolutely shattered. You've had a too long a day as far as what you're used to. And you got this bad back. When you get up, you're wincing, and you're getting this grief in your ear holes every day from people that that are either jealous of you or don't understand where you're at, etc. What happens eventually is that it comes down to football. Can you play or not? And I must have put across, when I got fit from the back injury, that I could play, that I weren't special. I didn't think I was special. I didn't fancy myself. And I got on with the job and tried to do the best for my team. And so I think I got through by hard work and a bit of effort and keeping my mouth shut, if you like.
Steve, those first seasons in the first team brought great success. 2 League Cup winners' medals, a UEFA Cup winners' medal, as well. How much did that period itself instill the importance of winning trophies to you?
When you're with a group of players, people talk about budgets. Not that you ever think about that as a player, but it's obvious something's happening behind the scenes that, you know, the team can afford this or can't afford that. And at the end of the season, when it's all tallied up, have you been credible? Have you done your job? Have you earned your money, as low as it was then? Have you earned your money? Have you kept your respect? You know, are you a bona fide professional who deserves to play for Tottenham Hotspur? And of course, the manager has got his own opinion of you. Are you improving, or are you solving problems? Are you a leader? How's your passing? How's your touch? Does it need improving? So there's all these judgments on you going the whole time. But the bottom line is, have you won anything? It's all right being a good team, but have you won anything? And as you rightly said, in those early years for me, we did win things. I mean, I won a hell of a lot with the Spurs youth team, and the pinnacle of that was the FA Youth Cup, which Tottenham had never won before. But, you know, every league we played, every cup we played, we, you know, 1 year we won everything bar one trophy. We got beat 1-0 at Colchester one night, and I can't tell you how we got beat, but we did. And so that was your way as a youth team player, being credible or being viable or whatever you want to call it. And at pro level, again, same thing. And there's so few trophies you can win. You might you've got to try your ultimate in every trophy you can. So eventually we won the League Cups and the UEFA Cup and stuff. And I'm the youngster in the team. I'm having a ball. I think this is going to happen every year. Well, of course it don't. And Alan Mallory said to me one day, Steve, you better enjoy this because this is not normal. You're on a roll, Cocker. You this don't happen. You win one trophy every 6, 7, 8 years. Enjoy it while you can. He's not saying go out and get drunk and stuff like that. Enjoy. If it's the last game of the season, although the League Cup wouldn't have been, but maybe the UEFA Cup win was. Last game of the season, yeah, go and enjoy yourself, have a good rest and prepare for next. Because the moment you walk into that training ground at the start of pre-season for the next season, it means nothing. Yes, for last season, it means good. You've stood up for yourself and you've been accountable. But now it's done. It's finished. You've been paid your bonus, whatever it was. Now it's on to the next, and you've got to get the next one. And that's something that Bill Nick sort of instilled in the players. And don't rest on your laurels. Someone else is pushing for you. You know, he might have used my name early on. You know, Steve Perriman's come into the team. We've got other good youngsters below him. If you take your foot off the pedal, they're coming for you. So that's the point of winning trophies. And when you win a trophy, the belief grows in your own game. The belief grows in your team and your teammates, in your club. The supporters and the players get closer. I'm not saying we weren't ever close, but you get even closer. Their respect for you goes up a notch because you've won a trophy. They can go into work and, you know, speak in good terms about their team, and everyone's proud of the name Tottenham Hotspur, and that's what I think it means to a club.
We are going to go for a very quick break, and taking you into that break is Anna from Spurs XY, who will be reviewing Tottenham Hotspur's historic Barclays FA Women's Super League fixture against Arsenal. And after that break, we'll be hearing more from...
Tis the season to be hunched over your laptop. Not on our watch. In real life, you can feel your senses and your baskets. Feel all the sights, sounds, lols and OMGs. Wear laughing emojis on actual smiley faces. Batteries running low? Take the kids to Santa's Grotto. In real life, you can find just the right present using the most advanced search engine in the world. Your eyes. We heart in real life. Brent Cross London. Free parking for all sleighs and cars.
Steve Perriman on his time spent at Tottenham Hotspur. We've all been there. It's Wednesday night and the Champions League is in full swing. A player you've never heard of picks up the ball on the halfway line. He goes past one, goes past another, and then all of a sudden he's on the edge of the box. He doesn't look up, but he curls a beauty into the top right hand corner. He's the next big thing coming to Spurs. You sure of it? Well, now you can make a bit of cash on your prediction too. Football Index is the stock market for buying shares in footballers and the only football stock market available. They can even win payouts when they score an assist and when they perform in the media. Remember, this is an investment and a sure way of making profit, similar to what Harry Winks and Oliver Skipp were when they were promoted to the Tottenham Hotspur first team. So go to www.footballindex.co.uk or download this app. Use the code SPURS on sign up to get the £500 money back guarantee. Start trading in something you love today with Football Index. Terms and conditions apply, 18 plus, and please gamble responsibly at begambleaware.org. Thank you for your support as always.
Hello everyone, I'm Anna from Spurs XY and welcome back to the Spurs Women segment here on The Last Word on Spurs. It was today. Finally, we got to it. The North London Derby at the Tottenham Hotspur Stadium. Honestly, I was so excited for this. If you listen to the Love Sport radio show that we talked about it there midweek, I went on to the BBC and talked about it there. There was proper hype for this. It was built up a lot. Rightfully so. I mean, it's a North London Derby. You can't knock that. And one of the main goals, I think, for this, like, there were a couple things going into this game I wanted to achieve. I wanted to achieve a good attendance. I wanted to break the record, the WSL record, because I wanted to attract more attention and more fans to the game, to Spurs women, because they deserve it. The other thing was that within the game, I wanted us to make ourselves proud and do ourselves proud, because I know we can play really, really well. And I wanted to have fun. So let's get into it. The record, we broke the record attendance. It's over 38,000. The original record, I think, was around 35 or 36 for the Manchester Derby, but we broke that. And it felt like a lot of people went there. I thought it would be a bit busier, but I was actually still blown away by how busy it was. So it was brilliant. There were loads of families there, loads of kids, loads of daughters and little girls as well. It was lovely to see how many people that attracted as well. And it was crazy to see how many families were there, really. Like, I didn't sit in my usual seat, but at the south stand, so I was sitting by the halfway line. But I was just looking around, and all I saw were families. Everyone either came with kids or teenagers or anything. Like, there were just families, like loads of them, which was really, really cool. That was, you know, one of the goals achieved was we managed to bring more attention to women's side of football. And then going into the game, we put out a very strong side. I really liked it. I think it was good. It showed fighting character. You know, there was no sentiment involved. It was about the footballing event. It was about the football match, not just the event. And I really liked it. And to be honest, that all came through in the first half. We played incredible. Like, okay, it wasn't probably our best football because we still made mistakes and some of our final passes and final balls weren't the best. But overall, we held our own so well. And we were just amazing. We were not fazed at all by the atmosphere. On the contrary, I think it spurred us on, excuse the pun. I think it really edged us on, and we really thrived in it. And I knew we would. I had a feeling. BBC asked me while we were recording, it's like, how do you think, will they crumble? I was like, no, we're not. We're not going to crumble. I know these. I don't know them, obviously, personally, but I had a feeling that we wouldn't. And I was so proud of them. The Arsenal didn't look, I don't know how they won the season last year, because they didn't look that strong. I must say, overall, I think Chelsea and United look much stronger. So we looked really, really, really good in the first half. We had some great chances. Kit Graham went through on and was one-on-one with the keeper, but she just couldn't put it past her. And we just had chances, but we just didn't take them. And unfortunately, when you play against a stronger opposition, they will, you know, even if they don't get that many chances, they're unfortunately going to put it away. And unfortunately, that's what happened in the second half. Like, they scored. It was Little. Their player's name is called Little. And she was bossing the second half. Like, you could visibly see that everything was going through her. And then they just got the goal. And it was a little bit against runner play. But at the end of the day, at 1-0, I was like, okay, fine. It's 1-0. I didn't expect us to win. I was very, very hopeful. I thought we could nick a goal. But even a draw would have been incredible. But 1-0, I was like, we can really hold our heads up high. Unfortunately, Anna Philby made a mistake and a stupid back pass led to another goal, and it made it 2-0, which was very, very disheartening, because I don't think 2-0 is a fair reflection of the game. I think 1-0 would have been better, because Arsenal weren't that much better. As I said, I think Chelsea were a lot better when we played against them at the Bridge. I had much more respect for Chelsea. But overall, I think, let's stop talking about other players and other teams. We did very, very well, and I'm very, very proud of them. So, you know, as I said, going into this game, there were three things I wanted to do. Which one was the attendance, which we broke. The second was to put in decent performance, which I think we really achieved, and we looked really good against last season's champions. And to enjoy the game. And for the most part, I did. As I said, some of the fans really annoyed me. But what can you do? If some people are disrespectful, then some people are disrespectful. But that shouldn't take away from the occasion. And it was incredible. And it's really sad that it's over now, because I was really, really looking forward to it. But it was worth it. It was amazing. And I'm so glad that I went there and I got to see the women play at the new stadium, because they fully deserve it. And to be honest, we're on such an upwards trajectory. We can only go from strength to strength, because we're sixth in the league right now. I think we're going to stay mid-table, and then who knows what the next couple of years hold for us. But anyway,
we've all been there. It's Wednesday night and the Champions League is in full swing. A player you've never heard of picks up the ball on the halfway line. He goes past one, goes past another, and then all of a sudden, he's on the edge of the box. He doesn't look up, but he curls a beauty into the top right-hand corner. He's the next big thing coming to Spurs. You sure of it? Well, now you can make a bit of cash on your prediction too. Football Index is the stock market for buying shares in footballers and the only football stock market available. They can even win payouts when they score an assist and when they perform in the media. Remember, this is an investment and a sure way of making profit, similar to what Harry Winks and Oliver Skipp were when they were promoted to the Tottenham Hotspur first team. So go to www.footballindex.co.uk or download this app. Use the code SPURS on sign up to get the £500 money back guarantee. Start trading in something you love today with Football Index. Terms and conditions apply, 18 plus, and please gamble responsibly at begambleaware.org. Thank you for your support as always.
Tis the season to be hunched over your laptop. Not on our watch. In real life, you can feel your senses and your baskets. Feel all the sights, sounds, lols and OMGs. Wear laughing emojis on actual smiley faces. Batteries running low? Take the kids to Santa's Grotto. In real life, you can find just the right present using the most advanced search engine in the world. Your eyes. We heart in real life. Brent Cross, London. Free parking for all sleighs and cars.
I'm getting carried away. I hope you enjoy the rest of the show. And come on, you Spurs.
After that period of all those trophy wins, came a real sliding doors moment with yourself. Just a day away from leaving the football club. What happened at that period?
Oh, if you thought the other stories were long, this is longer. For about 2 years, I almost didn't do anything wrong on the first team pitch. There was a moment in a game, home game against Liverpool, always tough games, where I went up for a header in midfield, just took a bump on the shoulder, bump, and come down heavy on my right ankle. And as happens. So it blew up. I carried on playing. Probably there was no midweek the next week, and I got myself fit for the next Saturday. But I lost my confidence in my ankle. And although I was still working hard and running around and chasing and tackling and doing what I needed to do, you just lose your edge. And my game sort of deteriorated. And I wasn't bad enough for Bielnik to leave me out the team. But I was definitely not as good as what people first thought for the first 2 years. And, you know, I was being named as if a future England captain and all of that stuff, which definitely I didn't really take serious because, as I said, I come back to it, I didn't really fancy myself. So I knew that I worked hard enough. I knew I was serious about football. I didn't think that I was quite good enough on the ball. As against others, I wasn't silky by any means. So so I was seen more as a team player than an individual. Anyway, eventually, Charlie Faulkner, the chief scout that had seen me the first time, he phoned me up and said, Steve, there was a bit of a ruckus in the office today. And this wasn't a typical phone call from Charlie. If I saw him in the offices or, you know, around the ground, he might say, how you doing, etc. But this was a phone call from him, and this was different. So he said they've decided in the office, which is where they go back after training and discuss what's just happened and the team for next Saturday, etc., that your legs have gone. And so they're talking about you sort of being finished with Tottenham. So this was, I mean, I knew I was struggling, but not enough for Bielnik to leave me out. So I couldn't have been struggling so bad. So he said, look, I'll show you. You think he's gone, I'll show you he's not. I'll show you how well thought of he is amongst other clubs in the top league. So I think that was how it worked out. And then he said, Bielnik's going to phone you later. And talk to you about it. So, okay, lovely. So, no phone call. I went in the next day and he said, Steve, I've never thought about letting you go, but I've asked the club for two players, and they've come back and they've asked for you. So what do you think about that? I said, where is it, Bill? Now, Charlie had already told me it was Coventry City, who were then in the top league. So he said, no, I'm not telling you. Okay, so if it's sort of way up north, no. If it's sort of Midlandish, downwards, yeah, I'll have it. He said, are you sure about that? Are you sure about what you just said to me? So I said, well, Bill, you asked me the question, and you must be asking me for a reason. So he said, I suggest you go home and you talk to your people that you listen to, be it your dad, your brother, your wife, whoever, and you just tell them what's been said and that you've said you're prepared to go. I said, well, Bill, I repeat, you've asked me. So anyway, I went home, spoke to people, came back the next day, said, Bill, yeah, I mean, it's important where this is. I've got young kids now and about schools and all that. But basically, yeah, I'll go. He said, I can't believe what you're saying. I just do not believe what you're saying. Well, same thing, Bill. You've asked me. Oh, okay, go and train and I'll speak to you later. Anyway, he didn't speak to me after the training. And that night he resigned. So maybe I was a day away, as you've just put it. Maybe Bill was just sort of threatening me with, you know, you need to improve to stay here, son, or what. But it could have also been a day away. And anyway, Bill Nick resigned. He left, and then new manager came in. And his first words to me at the end of the training session was, Steve, you're going nowhere. So that was the end of that. And then you carry on the career and end up doing 19 years at the place. So, I mean, loyalty works both ways. You know, I think I've been loyal. A couple of other occasions, a little whisper here and there and whatever, especially when we got relegated, a few teams, including Liverpool, sort of were talking about taking me. But it works both ways. You've got to want to stay. You've got to stay and play for the club, and the club have got to want you. If the club don't want you, there's no loyalty involved then. So you basically, people are loyal if it suits both parties. It suited me to stay for those years. I'm delighted that I stayed because it means that I get the respect that I got on the pitch, my 50th sort of anniversary of my debut and all of that stuff, and of course a testimonial back in the day. So I'm delighted that I was loyal, but I understand when other players are not loyal or, in another term, decide to go, because when you are not wanted by a manager, it's very, very difficult to change his mind. Very difficult. Of course, I didn't have to change Bill Nick's mind, did I? Because he left. All I had to do was re-impress a new manager, so which is probably a bit easier to do. So yeah, a day away could be right. Maybe it would never have been such, but really pleased that I didn't go.
Then came a really black period for us after Terry Neill took over. We recovered a little bit, and I know you say Terry made you a different player, but came down to the blackest day in my time anyway, relegation. And that season was the first season I really became a week in, week out fan, I must admit. And I think when I saw you in Dartford, I said to you then, you scored, for me, the most important goal that I've ever seen Tottenham score. That goal against Hull, which again, if we don't score, the Aussie and Ricky period just never happens, and we're stuck in Division 2 for God knows how long.
Yeah, I think it's very hard to pinpoint the reasons for that relegation, but I'll have a try. I think Bilnik, as he was getting old, was when you're say 20 years a manager, you start off and you're probably a bit naive. Then you have a middle period where you're on it, absolutely on it. And then you have a downturn towards the end where, you know, I thought Bilnik was trying to make too sure with signings. He was going to watch someone for too many times. He was almost waiting to find a weakness, therefore not to sign him. And we stopped competing for the best players. The best players were going elsewhere. There was a query mark whether Tottenham would pay under the counter money or black money, whatever you want to call it, to top up the sort of the signing fees and the wages. And, you know, they're possibly right not to do that. It's against the rules. But if everyone else is doing it, you are definitely going to lose out on signing the best players who want the best money. So we had three very important injuries, one to Roger Morgan, one to Jimmy Pearce, and one to Peter Collins. And they were going to be good players, these three. And to lose them in 1 year is just supposing they'd have been top 11 two or three years' time, you've lost a third of your team. So that means they have to be replaced, and we weren't good at replacing players. We weren't doing it particularly correctly. And then, you know, the rot had set in then, and Bilnik left, and Terry Neill, I'm not sure he was the right manager, but actually personally did not do me any harm. I would keep saying that, with his red connections and stuff. And then Keith Birkinshaw was appointed, who you'd have to say was naive to the management game and too naive to cope with the sort of second-class players that we'd become. And that's what we did become. We came second-class, i.e. second division. So, but anyone who started supporting us like yourself in those second days would have seen 50,000 crowds, a club that knew it shouldn't really be where it was, desperate to get out, a manager that was learning week by week. We got out playing with some style. Of course, when that team, helped by my goal against Hull City, and I think it was an important goal too, because the last step is always the hardest one to take to win anything or to get promoted. And we had started to stutter. I think we lost at home to Sunderland in what looked a very winnable game. And so the whole victory was absolutely immense. And so it led us to the last game at Southampton, and we got a 0-0 draw, and we both went up. Didn't help that Keith and Laurie McMenemy come out arm in arm, cuddling each other before the game along the touchline, and that led people to believe that there was some sort of agreement been made about getting a draw. Well, when Alan Ball hit the post, I don't think he'd entered into any agreement. So
Bally just wanted to beat Tottenham, mate.
Of course he did. So, but. I enjoyed that season as much as any.
Yeah.
Certainly more than the relegation season. And so we got back up, and then, you know, Keith said to me, he said, "Steve, I am going to make us a bloody good football team." And that's easier said than done. But then he went and signed Ozzy and Ricky, and then Garth and Archie, etc. We had youngsters coming through to sort of boost the squad. Roberts and Galvin were two great signings, fantastic signings. So, and that tells you what a team is. The team is about balance. It's, you got to have enough height, you got to have enough pace, you got enough hunger, you got to have enough nounce about you tactically, be it from the manager, be it from the pitch. And Yeah, you've got to have players that dig in. We had Glenn that could put the icing on the cake with his unbelievable technique. And the crowd reacted to getting up. Well, the crowd reacted to us going down in a very, very good way. They showed their loyalty to their club when we got relegated. And then they showed it again when we got promoted. So you're justifying yourself. The aim is to get promoted, and we got promoted. It's not a trophy, but it's a feather in your cap, although not a great feather because you shouldn't have got relegated, really. And then, you know, Keith started to build this team, and it didn't happen overnight, when just because he signed Argentinians. It probably led us a little bit to play a different type of way, which was definitely beatable. If you look at our results, you know, from signing the two lads onwards up until the early 80s. But it's about getting the balance of you know, it's no good being able to attack for your lives and be brilliant and you can't defend for Toffee because you're going to lose games. So, but Keith had an unbelievable passion for this club, for Tottenham Hotspur. And he
still has it today, doesn't he?
Yes, he truly believed that he was going to make something special. And, you know, I don't think we would compare, not that I saw the 50-51 team, the 60-61 team. I don't think we could compare to those, but we were the next best in, if you know what I mean. And although the early 70s team weren't bad either, but the early 80s team could hold its own, could compete, could score, could defend, could mix it. And with the confidence that the 80-81 cup gave us, it sort of notched us up to believing in ourselves a touch more. Coming back to what does a trophy do for you, adds to that belief. You have a few good nights at the end of a season on tour, or the after final banquet and stuff. You are together, you are more together than you've ever been, and you appreciate each other and work for each other, that extra bit, because you've managed to win through. So a great period. The early 80s was a great period for us.
Was 85 probably the biggest disappointment, in that it's the only time in my lifetime when I really believed we'd win the league. When we won at Liverpool for the first time in 73 years, an astonishing win at Anfield, it put us joint top. 13 games to go, 9 of which are at home, and we didn't win the league.
We blew it.
Is that, and if you could play one game in your time again, would it be that Everton home game?
I don't think we had anything to be embarrassed about with that game. I thought we played, played really well, and
big Neville.
It went against us. That there's certain games that go against you, but I think if you check it out. The next game, having come back from Liverpool within thereafter 70 odd years, I think it might have been Norwich at home. And okay, there is no certainty. There is no certainty in any game. But you'd like to think that we're going to go and take, you know, it's a massive 2 points at Liverpool. It's massive. But guess what? If you lose to Norwich, you've just cost yourself those 2 points you just won. It doesn't come off your total, of course not. But as per how your opponents are doing against you, with they're probably winning or drawing somewhere, you're losing chalks. And one of the things in a couple of the years where I thought we really had a chance, I don't believe in rotation, but I do believe if you go and play from our era, I don't know about this era, as per how they're travelling and the arrangements that are made. In our era, if you went and played in midweek in Europe, we were definitely not, we didn't quite have the legs that we would have done if we weren't playing. And the club we're playing against is probably not played in midweek. And so they have got their legs. And you know, you can have as many great players as you want, and technicians and Harden, Archie and all that goes with it. If you haven't got your legs against a team that has got legs, it can make up a great amount. Call it legs, put in their confidence, put in their, you know, like a winning mentality. If you go away and get beaten at Bayern Munich 4-1, for instance, in the fog, or 3-1, you come back, there's a slight edge taken off you, albeit you're not playing Bayern Munich on a Saturday. Mm. Do you see what I mean? So
yep.
It's anything that upsets your flow. And I come back to the rotation. I think rotation upsets your flow as well. So I was, part of the reason I was so consistent was I could listen to my body. Your body tells you when it's thirsty. Your body tells you when you're tired. The body tells you when you're hungry. The body gives you a clue about your fitness. And, you know, a fat ankle is a clue. Be careful with that. And I was very adept at listening to my body. And by the time I become experienced, I knew if that was a fat ankle that needed resting or a fat ankle that I could run through. And, you know, I hear about players missing games because they had cramp, or players missing games because they got a kick on the calf. Well, guess what? Kick on the calf hurts. But you can play through it without making any more damage. And that's the clue. If you've got physios that are telling you, I asked it all the time when there was doubt, will I do more damage? And if they said, no, you won't, Steve, that was it. That was good enough for me. So that's not saying I'm brave. That's saying I'm intelligent enough to listen to the person whose job it is to give the right advice. Be it a doctor like we expect when we go to, you know, a lawyer or whatever. It's no good going paying these fees for these people to give you advice and walk out the office and say he's talking shit.
Steve, can I ask you, after enjoyable years at Oxford and Watford, you returned to the football club as an assistant manager under Ozzy 7 years later, but you found a different club to the one which you originally were at. It was run by Alan Sugar. And if Daniel Levy to some is unpopular amongst some fans, is it fair to say some of your opinions on Alan Sugar's leadership and understanding of football isn't too high?
I've got to be very careful here, as I was when I wrote the book. All I will say is that it certainly was not the club that I'd left as a player in terms of spirit around the place, like a club spirit. And that can come from a laundry lady, a tea lady, the stewards, the wherever. But of course it's generated by you and the people that are leading the players. And there was a whole different feel about that place. I didn't enjoy being there. When eventually Ozzy left, and I knew I was going, but was asked to be caretaker, which lasted one game. When I eventually left, I knew I would be leaving. I wasn't too unhappy to leave because I didn't see it as a place that was conducive to improvement, to belief in who you were working for and stuff. So I think that's about as far as I can go on that. It was, of course, football changes, business changes, business takes over a bit. So there's nothing wrong with any of that. But, you know, basically you're a group of people working together for the same cause. And that is to make your club that you all feel strongly about, make them as successful as possible. And I think the club had lost that spirit. And football was not, it sort of started to happen a bit under Scholar. Football was not, didn't seem to be the most important thing anymore. That's worrying for me. That's worrying. I think if you want to run a football business properly, you get in football people that know about football, and you step back and listen to them about football things. And you know, I've been involved the last sort of third of my career at Exeter City. Well, it's because I was never going to work for anyone who could sort of dominate my opinion because of their money, because of pound notes. And I'm only a football man. I'm not a businessman. I'd shops, etc. But that was all dictated to by my second brother, Bill, thankfully. But I knew the value of, if my name's above the door, Steve Perryman Sports, that if I walked in and ignored the shop floor staff, I don't think that's helping them, turning them on, making them wanting to work better and harder for the end result. And, you know, any organisation is a group of people working and pulling together. And I think that's the only way forward. And in terms of football, what better way of earning money is being successful, i.e. winning things, and producing players. Now, if you buy a player, it's not all about producing your own homegrown players. I really believe in that. But if you buy a player like Bow, for instance, for a million, however much, and turn him into a world-class player, that's earning money. So do as much as you can for the players while they're with you to improve them. Not necessary to sell them, but if they're good enough then for, you know, a world-class team to want to sign them and they want to offer enough money, that's another way of earning money. So, you know, at Exeter City, we produce players and they're still surviving today on selling homegrown talent. And I think that's a great way to do it. I have a message for any club, Exeter or Spurs. Do not undersell, do not undervalue, do not treat homegrown players as second-class citizens. Because when you strip it right back, every player you've ever fancied as a good player was homegrown somewhere. And the best player I've ever played against is George Best, homegrown. The best technical player I've ever played with is Glenn Hoddle, homegrown. Where would Tottenham Hotspur be without Harry Kane in the last 3 or 4 years? Homegrown. I put myself in I'd never talk about myself as being good, but I was a bloody good captain, homegrown. And so it was a tense time. It was, I said in the book, I fell out of love with Tottenham Hotspur and football. And for Steve Perryman to say that, it was not good. It was not good. And so you need to, you know, start a new chapter. And my new chapter was for 6 months on a short-term contract in Norway. And then I went to Japan, which was amazing. The respect that Ozzy and myself got in Japan was phenomenal. And we won things. And, you know, people say, but it's Japan. Well, Wenger was in charge of a more powerful club than we were. They had the might of Toyota behind them.
Oh, Steve?
He did not win what we won. Oh. He did not win what we won, but yet came home and won the double. So when people say it's only Japan, it's tough to win trophies in any country you work in. And we did it. When we won the league in Japan, and Aussie won the League Cup and various other things, I won an Asian tournament. It was like Leicester City a few years back winning our league. It was a total surprise, because the club was not owned by a big multi multi-million industry, Mitsubishi, Hitachi, Yamaha, all these. It was owned by the community. So we weren't as powerful, but we were more clever. And it can be done. It can be done. With hard work, graft, people working together, a club all pulling the same way. And what I do believe is under Keith Birkinshaw and Bill Nicholson, the club was pulling the same way. They didn't agree with everything that you asked for. They didn't give you, they didn't send flowers to your wife. They didn't do, you know, noncy things that I hear about at other clubs. But when it came to your treatment as a player, you felt first class. First class. And therefore, when you went out to play, you didn't have any excuses.
One last thing I want to ask you, Steve, as we close on this hour, is you sadly missed the finale day at White Hart Lane. So what were your impressions of the new stadium when you finally had the chance to visit it, following your rightful induction also back into the club's Hall of Fame in 2012? I mean, tell us, what was your emotions going into that new stadium for the first time as we look to close the show?
Well, I was truly amazed Well, first of all, I went to the training ground. What a place to go and go to work every day and try and improve and practice and get down to work. Wonderful place. So whoever planned that, whoever paid for it, I take my hat off. Same with the stadium. Phenomenal. Someone said to me, Steve, do you think it's worth the money? I said, I don't understand the money part of it. But I tell you what, it was worth the wait. I feel very sorry for the next top class club that has to build a new stadium, because surely you've got to do it better every time. Tottenham have done it better, certainly from the one down the road. And it's a joy. It
doesn't help, Steve. They built their one north of the river instead of back in Woolwich. That's the problem with their one.
Yeah, well, I know where you're coming from on that. I have trouble with South London. I could go to Milner three times in a week and couldn't tell you how I got there or how I got home. Or Charlton or Crystal Palace. My memory does not take in the roads that I'm driving on. And I, of course, I'm from West London, but I, of course, prefer North London, but particularly one side of it.
Steve, what's your relationship now with the club like? I mean, obviously, as I mentioned, alluded to it, you've now rightfully was inducted back into the Hall of, well, rightfully inducted into the Hall of Fame in 2012. Would you say now you're on very good terms with the football club? How would you describe your relationship?
Yes, they've helped me promote the book, but that's at the end of a few years. I did not stay away on purpose from the last game of the season. I had a very important job to do for Exeter at Carlisle in a playoff semi-final, first leg. Would have loved to have been there. The manager, Paul Tisdale, said, Steve, are you sure you're not going to that game? Are you sure you don't think you should be there? And I said, Tiz, of course I should be there. Of course I should. And I'd love to be there, but Exeter City are paying my wages. And they're, you know, let's come back to winning a trophy. you've got to pay respect for the money that you're earning every week by getting some silverware at the end of the season. Well, our silverware was going to be promotion, hopefully. And, of course, to get promoted, you've got to get through the Carlisle game and then get to Wembley and hopefully win there. So I couldn't possibly go. And that was no disrespect to the club. I think the club are being very respectful to me now. I did not think they were being disrespectful when they were holding the Hall of Fame and allowing some of the double players to come down and pay their own expenses and not stay in hotels, to stay with friends and not give them petrol money and stuff like that, to attend a Hall of Fame when the club was earning money out of that function. It was a total total nonsense. So I said, I'm not going to be involved in this. And I held out. And eventually, I think they were respectful to me. And me and Jimmy Greaves were inducted on the same day. We had the same thoughts about it. Unfortunately, Jimmy couldn't be there because of his health situation. And a donation was made to Jimmy's recovery fund. So I felt that was good enough. And that was paying respect to what that evening means. And, you know, if the evening is about being, the honour, fine. Don't earn any money out of it.
Mm. I mean, Steve,
if it's about earning money, then so be it.
It's been a brilliant time with you tonight, mate. I mean, we could speak for weeks and weeks and weeks, and I honestly could. And thanks so much for spending the time with us.
The reason why I did the book in terms of the way it's turned out, it's not the typical autobiography with six pages in the middle with pictures. There's pictures to accompany every page. And the reason I did that was because of one thing, the letter that Bill Nicholson sent my father. So Mr. Spurs sends a letter to the father of a 15-year-old boy saying how much he wanted to sign him and how the school problems were evaporating, because I did have a problem to leave school. They were going to take us to court and all that stuff, because my mother apparently had signed a form that I was going to stay till I was 18. They were making a case that I would have been a university boy, which there was no possible chance on earth of that happening. And so the letter that he wrote to this 15-year-old's father, the 15-year-old eventually signed for the club and became the most trophied player, probably one of the most consistent players, not the best player at Tottenham, of course not, but nobody cared more than me. Nobody cared. So the famous artist drew something of me, and when he sent it to me, the original, he wrote on it, "To Steve, the best clubman Spurs have ever had." And I'm not going to argue with that.
Amen.
If you think about what clubman means. But could you ask the question? I think there was one sub involved in the famous game when we won a replay at Man United in the FA Cup when Glenn Hoddle had to go in goal. Can you name the sub that came on when Milja Aleksić was carried off?
Okay, that is the question. Steve, thank you ever so much for this hour. I can't thank you enough. And Steve, at some point when you're free, we know you're a busy man, we'll have to try and get together and do this again, Steve. It's been a real pleasure having you on this week's show. Thank you ever so much.
You're more than welcome. I've really enjoyed it. And hi to all the Spurs fans.
You are a star.
Absolute honour, mate.
Thank you so much.
They're being given time. They're taking it. Perriman. It's Pierce. Perriman! Brilliant!
Nutted away by Hill. To Perriman, and it's in, off the goalkeeper's arms, it's a goal. Steve Perriman must be credited with that.
Knowles is cross, Gilzine's header, Perriman. Tottenham's ninth corner. Terry Naylor, Gilzine, Chivers, no flag has been given. Todd had moved up expecting one. Coates, Perriman. And Derby looks done. And Steve Perriman gives the captain's answer.
Good cross there by Evans, clipped nicely there, and Perriman following it in. Chivers with a 1-2, Perriman! Yes! Than that. A
as Knowles takes another corner for Tottenham. It's a deeper one this time towards Mike England. Perryman in there! And what a good goal it is! Stevie Perryman! A brilliant goal for Tottenham!
Jones in the middle, but problems with Sparrow. Still got it across though. Now can Jones turn? It's played for Perryman! Yes, and Tottenham have scored!
Again trying to get round Cooper and does so.
Oh yes! Perryman! A beautiful goal for Tottenham!
Pratt. Duncan. He's got round. Perryman now. Blinding goal by Steve Perryman.
Now Hoddle. Hoddle taking it back again. Perryman's right in there. And Perryman has equalised within a minute. 1-1.
Here's Villa for Spurs. Here's Brook. Brook's waiting for a chance. So is Archibald here. So is Steve Perryman. And Steve Perryman, a great chaser of lost causes, puts Tottenham back to 3-2 with his first goal of the season.
5 minutes later, and it was Steve Perryman knocking the ball into the Ipswich penalty area. And as the attack continued, Perryman sliding in to put Tottenham back in front of 3-2.
Tis the season to be hunched over your laptop. Not on our watch. In real life, you can feel your senses and your baskets. Feel all the sights, sounds, lols and OMGs. Wear laughing emojis on actual smiley faces. Batteries running low? Take the kids to Santa's Grotto. In real life, you can find just the right present using the most advanced search engine in the world. Your eyes. We heart in real life. Brent Cross London. Free parking for all sleighs and cars.
Sports Social Podcast Network.
Lucky Land Casino asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.